Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. Really glad to have you listening. Well, here's something for you to think about. The majority of us will marry in life, and my guest today says that there are 7 crucial questions to explore before we get there. But I want to say this. If you're already married, these questions are worth asking and addressing in your own marriage. I'm excited to welcome Dr. Les Parrott back to the program. He and his wife have re-released a book that sold over 1 million copies, and it's like a brand new book because there's so much research in this book. It's titled Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, 7 Questions to Ask Before and After You Marry. I'm going to get him on in just a moment. I have a couple very important quick announcements. Faith Radio, we're so honored here to partner again with Angel Tree to minister to families who have parents and spouses in prison. And so for a gift of $14.58, you can help reach a child with an Angel Tree gift with the gospel and a loving message from their absent parent. And you're going to be hearing more about that from now up until Christmas. And it's an amazing outreach. These are life-changing initiatives. I want you to hear one such story.
Even at 10 years old, Adam Stevenson knew his destiny. Every adult male in his family had been in and out of prison. But that Christmas, more than 20 years ago, Angel Tree helps give Adam a glimpse of hope.
Christmas Eve, there was a knock at the door, and there are people there with their arms full of gifts, and they're from my father who was incarcerated. At that time, you feel great. You realize that your father was still thinking about you. Eventually, my father finishes his sentence, but he continues this journey of going in and out of prison over and over again, and every time my heart is broken. Somewhere around 2012, my father is arrested again. I'm trying to keep it together. Tears are filling my eyes. I'm having the same emotional break that I've always had. And God speaks to me, and he reminds me of my Angel Tree experience. He lets me know that I could have been a statistic. When every male in your family has done significant time in prison, what he showed me on that day is that he had spared me. I, who was once an Angel Tree child, could now be a blessing to someone else. And so I instantly signed up to be an Angel Tree church coordinator. I'm excited. And so every day I'm coming home, getting on my wife's nerves, wondering if anybody would ever call me. Well, at this time, I worked for Enterprise. So I go pick up a customer from Carson, California. As I pulled up, this lady comes out, she gets in the car, and she begins to tell me how she gives out toys to disadvantaged children every year and how she uses the truck in order to load it up and deliver gifts. I begin to tell her my story about how I recently signed up for this thing called Angel Tree and how I'm so excited and I'm waiting to become involved, but they tell me that there's a field director and I'm waiting on a call from her. There's silence in the vehicle. The lady, her mouth drops open, and she tells me, "I'm the lady." We instantly start to laugh, and she begins to tell me how her office is full of toys and she has no volunteers. I took the next 3 days off of work, wrapped toys, called parents to set up dates and distribution days. And so for the last few years, I have worked with Angel Tree, being a blessing to kids. Today, I look back at that broken little boy sitting on the steps in the project, wondering if life would ever get any better. Here I am, 23 years later, married to a beautiful, supportive wife, have 3 great daughters, and as I preach the gospel and on Sunday mornings, I get the joy of looking back and seeing my father play the bass guitar in the church that I pastor. And this is the thing. It all started with a gift. somewhere there's a little girl or little boy who is broken because their father or their mother is sitting in prison, and you never know what this one gift will do for them.
Somewhere, maybe in your own community, another 10-year-old needs to know that life gets better.
You know, we're not going to see the impact of our gifts on this side. We'll see maybe some of the impact, but not know the full impact till we see Jesus face to face. So this brings me to my next announcement. This is time for Live the Promises Great Giveaway. We do this during this month of, from November to the 17th of December, where I send you on a mini mission trip. It's easy as can be. What's the best thing you can do with $15? That's just the number we picked. Maybe you have $10 or $5. Maybe you have $100. But what's the best thing you can do with what's in your hand? Maybe Angel Tree is the way that you want to get involved. Maybe you want to get some friends together, gather your money together, send it to a third world country orphanage or to a battered woman's shelter, or bring a meal to somebody in your neighborhood that you don't particularly like because they're curmudgeon-y but they need some love. Whatever it is, get out of your comfort zone and change a life. Give a gift, change a life. And then on December 17th, we'll devote the whole show to you coming back from your mission field, so to speak, sharing your stories with us. I hear every year from listeners who say they have to pull over on the road, side of the road, and they're crying their eyes out because of your generosity. Listen to that one young man tell his story. Now he's a pastor. He's broken the cycle. Your gift may be that thing that changes the trajectory of somebody's life. If you want more information on Angel Tree or the great giveaway with Live the Promise, you'll find those both up on our website at myfaithradio.com. So let me tell you about my second hour guest today. I'm looking forward to talking with him, and we'll talk about this fantastic book, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. Dr. Les and Leslie Parrott, she doesn't get to join us today, but Les is with us. They're founders of the Center for Relationship Development at Seattle Pacific University. They live with their two sons in Seattle. You can find them on the web at lesandleslie.com. Dr. Les, thanks for joining us again on the show.
Hey, Susie, always good to be with you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. So we want to know, Les, we just love to start our conversations this way. Is there a passage of scripture you've been pondering, camping on, or maybe either a life verse you'd like to share with us?
Well, I'll tell you, my mind always goes to Romans 8. I don't know how you can, ever get tired of absorbing the truth and wisdom in that passage that Paul gives us, and especially that verse, there is therefore now no condemnation for those of us that are in Christ Jesus. That's the crux of the matter, is receiving Christ's grace in our lives, and that's the challenge. We don't always feel like we're worthy of that. So that's one that comes to mind immediately.
Excellent. I think we are such grace forgetters, for sure. Well, I would love for you to tell a bit of the story about how you and Leslie came into marriage and had, you know, just like anybody does, excited ideas of how marriage would be. And then, you know, that the opening year was maybe a little different than you thought it would be. Tell us just about some of the journey that you had in the opening season of marriage for you and for Leslie.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the very first line of this book, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, kind of gives it away, because it says, we never had pre-marriage counseling, but we spent the first year of our marriage in therapy. Mm-hmm. And that is the truth. We dated for 7 years before we got married. We knew each other pretty well. Both of our parents, our fathers were pastors. And nobody thought, hey, these people should probably have some pre-marriage counseling.
What an idea.
So we got off to kind of a rocky start. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're so passionate about this marriage preparation business, you know, helping couples launch lifelong love effectively. And the truth is, we know more about how to do that as professionals than we've ever known before. And so that's pretty exciting.
When you think about it, Les, in this digital age, young people will research anything and everything on the web. I mean, you think about it, they can be on 10 sites at one time, you know, split screen all over the place on, you know, buying their next whatever. And that's not really the case when it comes to marriage preparation. I mean, truly, I want to do my research. I want to know what I'm getting. I know when I'm getting it. But those kinds of questions aren't often asked by young people heading into marriage, are they?
No, they're not, and primarily because we put so much emphasis on the wedding. And trust me, they are definitely searching how to have a great wedding and where to go on their honeymoon. And, the amount of money that is spent on that ceremony is incredible. I think it averages more than $26,000 these days for a typical couple. And that's not including the honeymoon or the wedding rings. And so It is kind of disconcerting to think, why aren't they investing as much in the relationship as they are that ceremony? But that's the case. And that's why we want to make this, we're truly out to revolutionize the way couples prepare for lifelong love and make it more attractive than ever and more insightful and more effective. And here's what we know from a research perspective. Those couples that do have some kind of pre-marriage education reduce their chances for divorce by 31%. Mm. That's just one benefit to this whole thing, but that's enough in and of itself. And on top of it, we know that they'll also increase their level of contentment and satisfaction down the road by at least a third and compared to couples that don't have it. And so anyway, yeah, the tools are there, and we need to reach out to these couples and make sure it's accessible. As we like to say, we like to put the cookies on the bottom shelf.
I so appreciate how you and Leslie fight for marriage and make it as doable for people as possible. I mean, just to lay out and give skills, because I really do think some of being married successfully, there are acquired skills and habits and attitudes. I mean, this is when I think about my hubby and I've been married now 30 years, and we've been through some of our own valleys for sure. But it's like your best case scenario is learning to love the one you're with. I mean, you think about when you hang on through those valleys and you get on the other side, the richness of your love and the groundedness of your perspective cannot be found by going from relationship to relationship. I wish that could be broadcast from the mountaintops, but you don't always hear that, you know?
No, that is so true. And you know, people basically trade in one set of problems and struggles for another set and thinking, you know, they live under the delusion that this relationship won't have that. Hmm. And, of course, that's just not the case. We're too complicated as human beings and to live in the, you know, at the speed of life and in the challenge of just daily living with physical illnesses and financial stresses and parenting and all the rest. It doesn't matter how loving you are and how attractive this person might be to you. We all have struggles. It's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. But it's a fight worth fighting for.
Well, you talk about the importance of having good discernment and strong counselors before coming into marriage, Les. And it's the wise, humble, teachable person that will receive that advice to say, I need discernment. I need counselors. I need people to speak into my life to tell me what I'm not seeing. But the tricky thing is that first stage of love, so to speak, is so intoxicating. It's like you can't convince them they have a need. It's like, I'm feeling bliss like I've never felt before. What do you mean I need something or I'm not seeing something? I mean, how do you get through to someone who's kind of carried off in that intoxicating first stage of life? Or you just have to wait till they hit a wall?
Well, that's a great question. And the truth is that we will never, ever tell a couple, hey, you guys shouldn't get married. Because that's the fastest way to cause them to rush to the nearest place where somebody will marry them. But what we can say is, hey, it may be a good idea to pump the brakes on this relationship a little bit, and here's why. And the best way of doing that is through some objective means. In fact, Susie, when we, you know, this book, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, when we first wrote that book a number of years ago, we took all the latest and greatest research that we could and package it into a format that was easy to you know, access and put into practice. And when we kind of stepped back from that, after a million couples had gone through this process using Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, the publisher said, hey, you know, let's think about revising this, updating it, which is sometimes publisher speak for let's put a new cover on something to keep it alive. And we started to do some serious research at that point, said, if we're going to do that, let's do it right. And we went on a listening tour. We wanted to talk to 50 churches or Christian counselors on what they were doing for premarriage counseling. Well, we got so passionate about this, it ended up being 300, not 50, but 300. And one thing we learned is that every church does something on the premarriage front, and every counselor that is in this space does as well, of course. And they run into that couple that you were describing just a moment ago, that couple that is like, oh, my goodness, they should not be getting married, but how do we do this in a delicate way and in a way that they're going to hear that? That was one of the reasons we developed something brand new with this new book, the updated version of this book, that we call the SYMBIS Assessment, S-Y-M-B-I-S. That stands for Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. What this does is give an objective measure for a couple so that counselor, that pastor can say, hey, this isn't according to my opinion. This is what you guys are saying about your relationship. Mm. Take a look at this. That's what allows you to help them pump the brakes on a relationship that maybe needs some more time.
Would you say, Les, that that would also, that assessment would be diagnostic for a married couple as well?
For sure.
Okay.
And by the sound of that music, it sounds like we're going to come back from a break, and I'd love to talk about how we can do that, all of us, actually.
Excellent.
Access this tool.
I told Les before the show, Simba's assessment, it sounds so academic, so like them, Les and Leslie, but I love it. It's an easy way to remember it. Save your marriage before it starts. Simba'sAssessment.com. Get online and check it out. More with Dr. Les Parrott when we come back. Tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Les Parrott today about a book he co-authored and updated, revised with his wife, Leslie, titled Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, 7 Questions to Ask Before and Even After You Marry. 7 questions. The first question is, have you faced the myths of marriage with honesty? 4 of the myths are that we expect exactly the same things from marriage. Everything good in our relationship will actually get better. Every bad thing in my life will disappear, and my spouse will make me whole. We're going to address those in just a moment. And boy, you can go in blindly and be so disappointed because you're believing a myth, believing a lie. Before we do that, I want you to say more or less about this Simba's assessment that you referenced before the break. And for those who want to check it out, Simba'sAssessment.com. Simba's is Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, S-Y-M-B-I-S. Talk about just that process and what to expect on the other side.
Yeah, thanks, Susie. I really appreciate you asking more about it because this is something we are super excited and passionate about. I don't know if you're aware that Leslie and I were with eHarmony for the first 10 years of that company, and we're on the team that built that matching mechanism with the company that Neil Warren founded. And as a result of having all that experience on the technology side, and then, of course, dedicating our lives basically to understanding how to make marriage everything it was meant to be, we brought together those skill sets and built out what we think is a revolutionary marriage assessment. And that's why we call it the Simba's assessment, as you mentioned. And here's how it works. You have to take it with a facilitator. You can go online and learn about it, but ultimately you have to be invited by a trained facilitator. And I know some of our listeners out there would probably be found fantastic facilitators. You might be a marriage mentor couple. You might be in ministry. You might be a clinician or a therapist. And the training is done online through our website at simba'sassessment.com. And but those couples that want to take it, even if they don't have a facilitator, they can punch in their zip code and find a facilitator in their community and begin to do that. It takes 30 minutes to answer a string of questions, and each person in the couple does it separately, and that generates a 15-page report that'll blow your hair back, as we like to say. This thing really gives you some cool insight into your personalities, as well as some of your skill sets. We look at what we call your marriage momentum, all these things that you have working in your favor. We look at things like all the predictable things that we'll probably talk more about in this interview that come out of the book, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. But it is super cool. It's so fun to do, and it's not the kind of thing, like it's not like getting diagnosed by a doctor. This is something that you will truly enjoy, and it'll bring you closer together.
And what kind of cost, if I can ask?
I'm glad you did. So one of the cool things we did, the street price for taking the assessment is $35 per couple. But one of the things that we did in the book, in the inside jacket, we tell you how to find this. There's a little sticker that you peel off and find your individualized code that's specific to you and your copy of the book that gives you $5 off of that assessment. And so you can take it for a little bit of a discount as well. There's some churches and some we have, and this is super exciting to us. We launched this assessment in January, and our goal for this year in the first 12 months was to have 500 facilitators across North America. Well, we gave up on that goal a long time ago because we now have more than 2,000. Mm. And this thing really is getting great traction. And so now there's lots of churches that will do this complimentary. And so it just kind of depends on where you find your facilitator.
Les, you know, you think about it. We spend more than $35 on a date. And that you think about the kind of investment that you'd be making to say, let's take a deeper look, a really comprehensive look at who we are, how we connect with each other, so we can make adjustments. Because, again, we fly blind, and then we wonder why we fly into the wall. You know what I mean?
Right, right. No, exactly. It's such a minimal investment for a lifetime of paying dividends. And by the way, you asked earlier about, well, what if you're already married? If you're not engaged, can you take this thing? And whoever we show this thing to, in fact, I remember when we had in my study in Seattle, we had this whole thing up on wireframe. We were looking at it, and Dave Ramsey, the financial guru, was there because he was lending a hand on the financial implications of this. And we had some other people that were experts in various areas. And everybody that, even when it was at that stage, were saying, I want to take this for my own marriage. This is great. You're doing this for engaged couples. And so we have made that possible, too. So anybody at any age or stage can take this Invis assessment.
What would be, we've got about 2 minutes here before we have to take our hard break at the bottom of the hour, Les, just a heads up on that. But for this dating couple who's saving their marriage before it starts, what kind of advice or insight would they expect to receive?
Well, one of the things you're talking about when they go through the assessment.
Yes, on the other side of it, yep.
Yeah, so they'll walk away with a 15-page personalized report that gives them one of the greatest skill sets ever, and that's empathy, that capacity to see the world from the other person's perspective. I've often said, and Leslie agrees with me on this, I wish we could give it as a wedding gift to every couple that gets married because it solves so many problems. Just that, in fact, the research shows 9 times out of 10, whatever you're struggling with in marriage, if you could just accurately see that issue from your partner's perspective, it would totally dissipate. And so that's the power of empathy. And in a very real sense, on the big picture level, that's what the Symbis assessment does. It gives you the other person's perspective on all kinds of issues. And whether it's money matters, we have this thing called the money matrix that's very cool. And this is all done, by the way, in a really – this is not your grandparents' marriage assessment. This thing is designed – in fact, one pastor gave us the coolest kind of compliment the other day. He said if Steve Jobs or Apple were to design a pre-marriage assessment, it would look like this. Hmm. And so it's very accessible. But that's the gift. I think this is our best attempt to put that in a package as a wedding gift and give you a box of empathy to run wild throughout your relationship.
Wow. Well put. That's amazing. So check it out if you're curious. SymbusAssessment.com. It's also on LesandLeslie.com if you're curious. Title of their book that they re-released. Over 1 million copies sold the first time around. This one's packed with more information. And I want you to know we've got 3 copies. So if you want that $5 coupon, you got a question for Les today. I'm only opening the phone lines a bit because I want to give Les as much time as possible. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. When we come back, we're going to talk about the myths of marriage. Have you faced the myths of marriage with honesty? That's question number one. Dr. Les Parrott, when we come back. You're having a great Monday today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Les Parrott today. He and his wife, a while back, released the book Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts. Over 1 million copies sold, so the publisher wanted to bring it back, and Drs. Les and Leslie decided to upgrade, revise, and add all kinds of more content, which includes an assessment that you can do online, SymbusAssessment.com. I was thinking, Les, it'd be kind of neat to develop gift cards so people can buy a gift card for the assessment and actually give it away for a shower or wedding gift. I know there's ways to do that, you know?
That's That's awesome. And yeah, they can actually almost do that with the book because it comes with that little discount too. But to add that onto it is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Now I need to put you on our staff.
My brain's always working here. Okay, so you talk about these seven questions. And this first one is, have you faced the myths of marriage with honesty? I'm thinking, as I've read through these four myths, Les, that marriages have probably ended over these when they could have been solved with a good fight and a deep conversation. So talk about these myths of marriage.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons it's the very first question in the book, this chapter, have you faced the myths of marriage, the misbeliefs of marriage with honesty, because so many of us get hung up on something that, you know, we hold on to a belief we think is true and it's not. And it's our beliefs about marriage that fuel our behavior within the relationship. And so that's one of the very first things we've got to get straight, is straighten out some of that crooked thinking on our beliefs. And, you know, you mentioned in a previous segment some of those myths that we encounter, you know, that we expect the same things from married life and everything good will get better, everything bad will disappear. But one of the myths that we talk about in there is, I think, the most important. It's the one that's least articulated and most deeply felt. And it's the myth that says my spouse should make me whole, that this person should make up for the things that I'm lacking. That they should be almost a shortcut to my personal well-being and my personal growth. And, of course, that's too much pressure to put on an individual. That's the work we do with our Heavenly Father. And certainly our spouse can help us in that process. You know, as iron sharpens iron, we can help each other on that pathway. But to put that on another person is really going to cause some strain and pressure in the relationship, because nobody can, you know, nobody can complete you. You know, as romantic as that statement is, nobody can really do that.
And really, that will get us in such trouble. We've talked about it before, Les, on the show, just the idea of confusing, the idea that the spouse is a gift and Jesus is a source. And when the spouse becomes the source and no longer a gift, you're so disappointed in your spouse for reasons you have no right to be disappointed. And suddenly you put a burden on the marriage that it's not intended to carry, right?
Right. That's exactly right. Sometimes when Leslie and I have a chance to speak on a university campus, including our own, to a bunch of students, we'll often, you know, illustrate this by having a couple come up to the stage, face the audience, stand about a foot and a half apart, and then just kind of lean in their shoulders and onto each other, and then kind of put their heads on each other so it's touching. And I ask the audience, hey, what do we say when we see a couple like this? And it's inevitable. The whole audience just goes, oh, isn't that sweet, you know? And that's what Leslie and I call an A-frame relationship. And it's symbolic of this idea that this person is going to complete me. They're making up for everything that I'm lacking. And you sometimes see, quite literally, couples on a college campus that'll walk around almost like that, and you hardly see one without the other. You go to the dining hall, they're having dinner together, they're in the library studying together, and it's just, you know, and we go, oh, isn't that sweet? What happens in that A-frame relationship over time after they get married is, it's not just leaning in on that person, they start to pound down on that person, and hey, this is what you're supposed to do. You know, and if you were a good wife, if you were a good husband, these are the things that you would say. These are the things that you would do. This is how you would feel. And we place all this pressure. And eventually, you know, one person will stumble and the whole relationship gives way because it's enmeshed. It's overly dependent and it's unhealthy, even though it may look romantic from the outside.
Boy, so important. You said another question is, can you identify your love style? I want to jump over that if you don't mind, because I thought this was so, we need to get you back if you can come back, because there's so much here that I'm barely scratching the surface. But this question, have you developed the habit of happiness? You reference this quote, the most important characteristic of a marriageable person is the habit of happiness. Speak to that one if you would.
Yeah, Leslie and I were once speaking for a group up in the San Juan Islands off the shore of Washington, and which is one of the, like put it on your bucket list if you haven't been. It's incredibly gorgeous. And so we had given our final remarks, and because we had another commitment, we had to catch this flight, a little private little two-seater or four-seater Cessna, and it landed literally on the grass runway there on the island. And we take off, and you're going to think I'm making this up. Deer had to scatter out of the way as we drove down the runway.
That brings on some nausea.
Yeah. And we lifted off, And all of our fear about being in this little plane just kind of went away because, you know, look at that. And you could see the Cascade Mountains with the sun reflecting off of them, and the sun was sinking over the Olympic Mountains on the other side of the plane, and all these gorgeous islands and white sailboats. And as we started to land in Seattle, it was just a short little hop, just, you know, 45 minutes or less. And as we started to land in Seattle at the airport, I said to the pilot through the headphones I was wearing, I'm seated next to him, and I said, hey, what's the secret to getting a good landing in a plane like this? And he said, the secret is to find the right attitude in spite of atmospheric conditions. And I turned around to Leslie, and I said, he meant to say altitude. And he tugged on my shirt because it was loud in there, and he said, no, attitude. You heard me right. It's an and that was the first time I had learned that pilots talk about an airplane having an attitude when it lands. It has to do with the tail in relationship to the nose. We got out of that plane, and I said to Leslie, I said, find a pen and paper. I got to write that down. Finding the right attitude in spite of atmospheric conditions. That's what this question is all about, the habit of happiness. Do you have the habit of happiness? It's the capacity to adjust to things beyond your control. It's the capacity to have a bright outlook and an optimistic spirit on those days that are cloudy and when it's pouring rain. Finding the right attitude in atmospheric conditions. Again, I wish it was a gift we could give as a wedding gift to couples because every marriage, no matter how good it is, eventually bumps into bad things. And so this chapter is dedicated to kind of putting those shock absorbers on your relationship so that you can handle those things well and come out stronger on the other side.
Well, Les, why do some rise above the fray after hard trials and others just shrivel up into a, to a place of utter resentment and bitterness?
Yeah, well, a bad thing, you know, and like I said, every good marriage will bump into a bad thing. It could be, you know, something, a financial struggle. It could be infertility. It could be something devastating like, unfaithfulness or what have you. The list goes on and on. Every good marriage eventually bumps into bad things. In our marriage, one of our big jolts was having our baby, who is now 17 and a miracle to us, but he was born at a pound and went through multiple surgeries. And sometimes that fragments a couple, and it certainly could have done that for Leslie and me. But it's that, to answer your question, it's that attitude to adjust to things beyond your control, to find the right attitude in spite of our temptation to blame, in spite of our temptation to resent this person. And when you do that, it really is like putting shock absorbers in your relationship. This chapter, by the way, in the book, it's one of the seven questions, and it's the one chapter that we thought, maybe we shouldn't include this one, you know. Other marriage preparation materials really don't have it in there, and let's get to the other things like communication and conflict and more predictable. And I got to tell you something, Susie, we get more email from couples on this particular chapter, The Habit of Happiness, than anything else. It sounds kind of glib, the habit of happiness, but it's not. It's a deep, abiding capacity to find joy in whatever circumstances you're in. And we often, by the way, even hear from couples right after their honeymoon where they say, we had the opportunity to practice this right on our honeymoon. So
it's so
really
good.
Valuable.
We've had Randy Elkhorn on a couple of times. He wrote a big, thick, exhaustive book on happiness, a biblical perspective on happiness, and he makes a case for it. He said we've somewhere, you know, made such a distinction that happiness is opposed to holiness. Like God, if he has to choose, he only wants you holy. But he said, no. He said the happiest people are the holiest people. But anyway, I love that you included that, and I think there's so much choice involved to how we're going to respond to those atmospheric conditions that I'm glad you spoke to it. You also addressed, though, the power of negative thinking, and there's a number of questions I have for you around this, if you don't mind, but I want you to talk about the power of negative thinking within the context of marriage.
Yeah, I'm not sitting at my desk with that copy of a book in front of me, so you might have to list some of those out for me, but I can tell you this, that negative thinking is so contagious, and when we bring in fact, I, when we were in graduate school, Les and I were in Los Angeles going to graduate school, I remember having one of the biggest self-pity parties L.A. has ever seen because I came home and I had been trying to get this teaching assistantship and it fell through and this other student got it. And I noticed that he also had one of the great apartments on our campus. It had a beautiful view out over the 7-Eleven, you know.
Like, lucky guy.
Yeah, right. And it was just one of those moments where I just thought, when are some good things going to happen to me, you know? And I remember as I kind of brought that self-pity home, I really noticed for the first time how contagious that negative thinking is, because Leslie started to join right in with me. After all, who wouldn't, you know? She's my spouse. And so that's the power of negative thinking. It snowballs and it gets away from you. And before you know it, you've created quite a dismal experience for the two of you.
Mm. Here's a quote. You say, most negative people feel they could be positive if they had a different job, lived in a better place, or married a different person. But happiness does not hinge on better circumstances. A person with bad attitudes will still be a person with bad attitudes wherever and with whomever he or she lives. And you said that these negative interpretations are guaranteed to sap the happiness right out of a marriage. So if someone is stuck in constant negative interpretations, I think there's another what's another term for that too, but a negative bias or something like that maybe. But talk about that when you start to build a case where, and everything fits in your case, because I think what you look for, you can find. Speak to that. And when someone gets stuck in that rut, the impact on the marriage.
Yeah, it creates a mindset for sure that, you know, you do find what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in when I'm teaching general psychology and I have 200 students in the room, I'll say, hey, how many of you have a green mindset? And, of course, they go, what's he talking about? You know, and then I say, I'm going to give you like 15 seconds. I just want you to pay attention to everything that is green in the room. And I give them 15 seconds. I count it down, you know. And then I say, I want you to now huddle up with three people and just identify, write a list of everything green that you saw. And we create these huge, long lists, and there's a little eraser over there that's green. And I noticed the piece of the logo on the clock up there on the wall is green, and this over here, and she's wearing a green sweater, and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, what you do is begin to find the things that you're looking for, and it's a simple illustration to say that we have this kind of mindset, too, in life, whether it's conscious or not, where if we're looking for negative, we're going to find the negative. And that's true of our spouse, and every married couple knows this. You know, if they've been married for any number of years, if you want to find the negative stuff about your spouse, it's not tough. You know, it's easy to make that case. If you want to find the positive stuff, you can do that too. And so that's really what we're getting at there.
So good. He also writes, when you ruminate about an injustice done to you, replaying it over and over again in your mind, it will trigger a flood of negative emotions that feed the hurt all the more. Then comes a succession of confirming incidents to convince you that the object of your resentment is the source of all of your unhappiness. When we come back, Les, I'd love for you to speak to the other spouse. What's the other spouse to do if they're on the receiving end of this and they just feel stuck? And then we'll talk more about some of these questions you want to ask before you get married. But if you're already married, you can still ask them and explore so you can work on having a healthy, thriving marriage. More with Dr. Les Parrott when we come back. Tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to our friend Dr. Les Parrott. He and his wife re-released the book Saving Your Marriages Before It Starts. Saving Your Marriage, that's singular, not plural. Before It Starts, 7 Questions to Ask Before and After You Married. And we're going to get to the one question that I love that you offer. Can you say what you mean and understand what you hear? I want to talk about that in a moment. But just because, Les, we hear from so many listeners who are either the person who's stuck in a rut of resentment or they're on the receiving end, I would just love for you to speak to this. So I'll restate this quote from your book and have you speak to the other spouse on the receiving end. You said, when you ruminate about an injustice done to you, replaying it over and over again in your mind, it will trigger a flood of negative emotions that feed the hurt all the more. Then comes a succession of confirming incidents. I think that's so important to convince you that the object of your resentment is really the source of all of your unhappiness. So when you think of that person, and it's scripturally, you know, talks about the root of bitterness that springs up and defiles many. So what's the receiving spouse? What's the other spouse supposed to do when they're receiving this kind of resentment? What's their wisest course of action?
Yeah. Isn't it true? I mean, we can all identify with that. How many times have you been just on the brink of falling asleep in bed, and then suddenly you think of, oh, why did he say that to me that way? And you suddenly can't sleep anymore because now you're replaying it in your mind, and then he did this too, and that other thing happened, and we just start to train our brain. It's almost like a reflex. We can't help ourselves, and so you have to really be deliberate about stepping outside of that rut and carving a new groove, a positive groove, into your thinking. But if you're on the receiving end of that, of a resentful spouse and a spouse that just can only see the bad in you, here's what I can say. And again, we know this not only from a biblical perspective, we know this from research, that when you begin to bring a positive dynamic that only you can control into the relationship, and you begin to kind of change the dance, as it were, you know, create a different dance step around that in a positive way, it becomes contagious. First of all, it becomes confusing to your partner. Like, hey, she's not getting all riled up this time. And so they come on a little harder maybe. And, wow, she's really not getting riled up again. And suddenly they see a different perspective. They have to change their dynamic. We sometimes, psychologists like to compare it to a mobile that hangs from the ceiling. And you move one little part, and it doesn't just change that part. It changes the whole dynamic. It has to find a new equilibrium, a new balance, because that one part has changed. And the same thing happens in a relationship or even a whole family. When one person does kind of a new dance step, everybody else has to find a new way of dancing as well. And so don't be discouraged. If that's you, find that new dance step. It may take some friends that can help you see it differently, that'll give you that boost. It may take some time of worship. It may take some time inviting the Holy Spirit to help you gain clarity and creativity in that process, and maybe even a counselor, but it's doable, and I've seen it countless times in a marriage relationship.
Such good advice, Les. You think about back to your, you know, the whole idea of an attitude of happiness. We all are each personally responsible for those replayed thoughts in our minds. I mean, no one can fight that battle for us, and we can all build a case against our spouse. So to just guard where those thoughts go for the sake of our own health, but the health of the marriage, boy, that's critical. Well, here's one of the questions you say that we need to ask is, can you say what you mean and understand what you hear? Say more about that one.
Well, this is not a big surprise. It's the lifeblood of any marriage relationship, communication. And it's one of those things, particularly in the front end of marriage, couples think, hey, we don't need any help with that. That's all we do. We go out on dates. We have these fantastic talks, you know, late into the evening, and we don't have any communication problems. And then they get married, and I sometimes liken it to teaching somebody how to use an Excel sheet on the computer, and their eyes glaze over because they have no application for it. It's like, I'm never going to use this. Why are you even doing this? And then they get into a job where they realize, oh, I wish I could learn that Excel thing again. That might save me a lot of time. And communication is a little that way. And so what we do in this chapter is really spend most of it focusing on the basics. There was a coach at UCLA, John Wooden, and if you're a basketball fan, you'll recognize his name. Mm-hmm. But John did something really incredible in the first practice of every year. He would take a half hour and focus on how not to dribble the ball, not how to shoot, not how to whatever. He would spend a half hour on how to put on your socks. And he said, we're going to start with the fundamentals. There's good ways and bad ways of wearing socks. And when you play basketball and you don't want to blister, and, you know, think about that. And in the same way, we kind of do this with couples, and we say, let's focus on the fundamentals here. And so it's really two things. We don't want to overwhelm you. It's just two things. If you can get a kind of a lock on these two things, it can really carry you down through the decades of marriage. One is to clarify content. And some of us want to go, well, yeah, of course, we clarify content so we understand. But, man, do we jump to conclusions? I know exactly what you mean. You don't have to say it anymore, right? And we kind of approach it that way. So we need to clarify content, make sure we accurately understand what is truly being said. And then second, we need to reflect feelings. Reflect feelings. There's a river of emotions that flows between every husband and wife, every engaged couple. And if you are a skilled communicator, it's almost like you're panning for gold. You sift through the verbiage and find that little golden nugget of an emotion, and you lift it out, and you hand it back to the person and go, is this how you feel? And they go, oh, yeah, that's, yeah, you're the first person all day that really understands how I feel about this. And if that's all you do in a conversation is clarify content and reflect feeling, we sometimes call that being an aggressive listener. If you do those two things, you'll be working on them the rest of your life. Because I got to tell you, I'm a psychologist. I get paid to do those two things, and it's still hard, you know?
Wow. Clarify content. Clarify content and reflect feeling. I mean, those two things, Les, make you feel heard and make you feel cared about, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And when somebody does that for you, it's just such a refreshing thing. Think about the last time you were conscious of doing that for anyone, your spouse or anybody else. When was the last time somebody really did that for you? It's a rarity. And most of us think we do it better than we really do, but it's challenging. And it's so funny to, once you become conscious of those two things, it's so funny, even in daily interactions, how infrequently we do that for one another. And you can put something out there and the person just totally either ignores it or misunderstands it. And so anyway, that's it. Clarify
it's so good.
Content, reflect feelings.
Because we're such multitaskers, you know, I'm thinking of men, you know, whipping through your list wanting to fix it, and we as women taking things personal that you never intended. And I think those things happen when we're whipping through life. But it takes some mental presence and emotional presence to hear what you're saying enough to go, oh, is this what you're saying? And is this how it made you feel? That means everything else has to take a back seat. But that in itself, even less, is sort of a lost art, it seems.
Yeah, it is. And there are definitely gender differences, too. You know, and sometimes we think, oh, women are the real pros at feelings because they have a larger feeling vocabulary, which is true. We know that from research. And so we think, oh, they're probably better at reflecting feelings. But that's not the case. Men will tend to jump to conclusions or have a difficult time expressing their emotions compared to women sometimes. You know, the old joke, you ask a man how you feel, you know, I'm fine. I'm not hungry. I'm just fine, you know. But what happens for women is because they have these more feelings at their fingertips, as it were, they will tend to project feelings onto their husband that their husband, you know, isn't even conscious of or maybe just completely off base. And so, you know, Leslie might say something to me like, wow, it sounds like you're really frustrated by that. No, not really frustrated. I'm actually excited about it, you know, and so that projection, and as long as her heart, and by the way, I'm glad I thought about this. Those two skills, they work incredibly well as long as it all hinges on one thing, and that is a platform of genuineness. If you aren't genuine when you do this, they will fall flat. It's not a technique or a strategy. It has to come from the heart. And when your partner does it, and that's why, here's the really good news for men that are listening in right now going, well, I'm going to have a tough time reflecting feelings. Here's the good news. You can be dead wrong, and this will still be incredibly successful as long as your heart is in it. And we pick up on genuineness through eye contact and all that other stuff, but if your spouse knows that you're genuine about it, they're going to help you find a way.
There is a way to have a thriving marriage, and I just love this book. I think it's packed with content, Saving Your Marriage Before It Starts, 7 questions to ask before and after you marry. Wondering if, Les, if you would pray. I'm just thinking of that person listening today who's been married a long time, who's in a rut and wondering if there's hope for them to be refreshed. Would you pray for that person?
I absolutely will, and let me just remind our folks that they go to Les and Leslie, and there's her workbooks and all the rest there that'll help them put it into practice. Father, we just thank you for this opportunity to be on the airwaves today, and we know there's people listening in right now, and this program was exactly what they needed to hear. Speak to them right now. Give them wisdom for next steps. Help them begin to rise above their difficult situation by just being aware of some of the next steps they need to take. Fill us with your Holy Spirit as we process all of this so that we love you better and in turn love one another better. In your holy name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Les, it's always an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Anytime, Susie. It's always a blast. Thank you.
And maybe you're feeling led to become a Symbus Assessment Coordinator Facilitator. Check out the website, symbusassessment.com, or fill out that assessment. I would love to just hear back from you how that went for you. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a little bit, you'll find the podcast of my conversation with Les up on our website at myfaithradio.com. We've made it very shareable, so with a click of a button, you can send it out by Facebook, email, or Twitter. And guess what? We will meet you back here next time.